Candace Lim, and you're listening to ICYMI, in case you missed it, Slate's podcast about internet culture. And let me paint a picture for you. What if one day you woke up to see your name blasted on Reddit and Twitter and your car on TMZ? Well, that's only half of the story with our guest today, who the internet has claimed as the unsung hero of a little show called Vanderpump Rules. Anne Maddox was working at the Greek Theater in LA when the pandemic hit in 2020. She lost her job and went on Facebook to ask for any leads, when a friend reached out and said a cast member of Vanderpump Rules was looking for a personal assistant. And that person was Tom Sandoval, who became the epicenter of a pop culture scandal in 2023. Now, you've probably heard of Sandoval. Rachel even covered it here on the show not too long before I joined as co-host. Tom Sandoval had been cheating on his partner of 10 years and VPR co-star Ariana Maddox with another VPR cast member, Raquel, now Rachel, Levis. And this was a landmark moment for Vanderpump Rules, whose season 10 finale, which documented the fallout of the scandal, earned series-high ratings. But it also made the show Emmy-nominated for the first time in its history. And a huge part of this monoculture event was the internet fervor that spurred timelines, Reddit investigations, and Instagram sleuthing that interrogated every character and every moment in the history of Vanderpump Rules. And the internet seemed to fixate on certain tertiary characters, including Anne Maddox, who is not related to Ariana Maddox, but was Tom Sandoval's personal assistant when Sandoval went down. And because of the events of Sandoval, Anne appears in season 11 as a messenger of sorts between Ariana and Sandoval, because not only do they have a no-contact rule, but they were also living in the same house following the breakup.
So Tom wants to have a birthday party here tomorrow. And he said that he could get you like a very nice hotel room.
That's not happening.
Okay.
I think that's very disrespectful and inappropriate. Mm-hmm. If he wants to have a party, he can have it somewhere else.
Got it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
If there are people here making noise, I will call the cops.
Okay.
And now that Anne has appeared on the show, even doing a confessional, she is getting more attention. A lot of attention. Maybe too much attention, especially online. And being ICYMI, we want to know what that's like. So on today's episode, I'm talking to Anne Maddox about how she got into this line of work, what she knew when Sandoval went down, and what's it like to have your personal and professional life dissected online. I'll be back with Anne after the break. Hey there. If you love our podcasts, then maybe you should consider subscribing to Slate Plus. With Slate Plus, there are no ads on any Slate podcasts. And Slate Plus helps keep this podcast going, because this show would not be possible without your support. With Slate Plus, you'll get bonus segments and episodes for shows like Slow Burn, Amicus, and Political Gabfest. You'll also never hit a paywall on the Slate website, meaning you get access to every article and every advice column. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That's slate.com/ICYMI+. And we're back. Joining me today is a comedian, actor, and the host of the We Signed an NDA podcast. You may also know her as Tom Sandoval's ex-assistant. It's Anne Maddox. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Hi, thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
We're so excited because this is your first time on ICYMI. So we do have to ask you the question we ask all first-time guests, which is, what was your first internet memory?
Oh, gosh. My very first internet memory is definitely the sound of logging on the...
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And then as all millennial 14-year-olds have done, you would go into a chat room on like Internet Explorer and you would... just basically catfish. It was like we were catfishing before we knew what catfishing was. And it'd be like me and my best friend, Jessica, being like, hey, we're college girls.
That is a great universal memory. We have a lot to get to in today's episode, from your time as Tom Sandoval's assistant to your own podcast, which kind of recalls Scandoval from your perspective. But I would actually love to ask about your life before entering the Vanderpump Rules universe. How did you end up in LA?
So I always loved, you know, the being in front of the camera, being behind the camera, acting, mm-hmm. theater. So I decided to major in film and television production because I just didn't have the self-esteem to ever imagine that I could be capable of being in front of the camera. And then with that degree, I felt like the only place I could get a job is LA. So I packed everything in my car and drove out here. And once I got here, I started doing comedy and improv and stuff because I like writing and I like performing. I don't know. I caught the bug. I had so much fun doing it. And then I slowly started doing commercials and small TV roles. And I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm having more fun with this. I don't care if I am like a struggling comedian performer. Mm-hmm. This is what I want to do. And this is what makes me happy.
Can I ask, what were you doing for work once you got here?
I immediately got a job as a PA, which mm-hmm. is like, there's 1,000 PA jobs in Hollywood. And yeah. I did that. I started like transcribing for reality TV shows. I transcribed for Gene Simmons' Family Jewels, College Hill, a show called Three Wishes on NBC that only lasted like one or two seasons. But it's Amy Grant granting wishes.
I'm actually really curious about your transcribing work. Yeah. What was that like? Like, what were you doing?
So they give you these tapes. Some places, they still use VHS tapes. So you put in the VHS and then you'll see like an interview and then you write down word for word exactly what the person is saying. So every like breath, you have to like parentheses, exhale, and then you just type it all out. And then I would usually just like type it really fast and then put on my headphones and then just spell check like a, you know, 15-page document and then move on to the next. Yeah. And they have like requirements where it's like you have to do like 5 tapes a day or whatever. So, yeah.
Wow. You had a quota. Damn.
Yeah.
And like, do you remember what year we're in when you are doing all this transcription work?
I mean, I started in like 2005 and did it mm-hmm. for a few years.
2005 is a good place to start. I mean, that is the year you joined Upright Citizens Brigade, mm-hmm. right? UCB. I mean, yes. Can I ask about what got you interested in improv? Did you always want to do like comedic acting?
Yeah, I always wanted to play the weirdo in a sitcom, like the weird neighbor that's like, I brought the Jell-O, you know,
like the Kramer. You're like, I want to be Kramer. Yeah.
Kimmy Gibbler, Kramer. Like, that's Gunther. Yeah. I always was like drawn to those weirdos that became through improv. I was like, oh, this is my dream. I fell in love with improv and comedy through that. Like, I first was doing just kind of these like random comedic shows and mm-hmm. and then started taking classes there and like fell in love with the format. And I just really love that improv is like we're all building something together. That really was exciting to me. And it just kind of felt like magic, like that first time you see an improv show and you're like, what? They didn't write this. They just came up with it. You know, like it's that feeling. But of course, as we all know now, the 2000s weren't maybe the kindest to the BIPOC community in the comedy world, especially being a woman of color, female. You know, the downs were hard, very hard, but the ups were like worth it to me.
Yeah. And is there kind of a point when you stop doing improv as often?
It's a different scene now, but at the time it was very like competitive and cutthroat. And there was like maybe like 2 Asian Herald team members mm-hmm, at the time, mm-hmm. me being one of them. And I think I was like so young and I immigrated here from Japan. So, you know, like in my culture, we're trained to like not look people in the eyes. It's like rude to, or like show our teeth is like rude. And like, you know, in this industry, you have to have like that confidence to like look people in the eye and say what you want to say. So it was a little bit of a struggle. I had to like train myself to get out of that.
Yeah. You had to kind of untrain like such innate parts of you to basically be like a functioning LA person, which is very hard.
Yes.
So while you're doing improv, is it fair to say that during the day you were able to like audition for things like commercials and shows and stuff like that?
That was a hustle as well. You get an hour for lunch break. And so you would plan your lunch break for that like audition that you have. And if your like transcribing job was in Hollywood, then it's not that bad. You could like make it back in time. You know, sometimes they would want you to drive out to Santa Monica. So you have to like sneak out of the office when no one's noticing and then sneak back in so that when your boss asks, you're like, oh, I just took an hour for my lunch. And you're like, mm-hmm. I actually took 2 hours, but...
But those hours were worth it because is it true that you were on The Office?
It's true.
Okay, story time. Story time. Let's go. I mean, okay, so you made a very cute guest appearance on The Office. Tell me who your character was. What were you up to?
So Michael Scott gets a second job to like pay his bills because his girlfriend is overspending a little. And mm-hmm. I work at the second job. I'm a pregnant girl, baby mama with my baby daddy who works with me. And we're just like lovey-dovey cuties. We all love Michael Scott. Like, it's the exact opposite of his job at The Office where we're all like, tell us about your script.
So you are doing improv by night. You are on The Office by day while also transcribing Gene Simmons's life. How did you get into personal assisting?
I started booking commercials and TV roles. So I was like, okay, I want to quit my full-time day job. I just can't keep doing this hustle. Like, yeah. Boss is catching on that I'm gone for 2 hours and I'm leaving all the time. So when that job ended, I was like, okay, I'm just going to take like freelance, anything that allows me to assist. And personal assisting is, you know, you're usually assisting an actor or someone in the industry. Mm-hmm. So they understand and they allow you to kind of, you know, fix your schedule so that you could go to an audition and then you could just like work later or come in earlier. I was assisting for a stop motion animator during the pandemic. I assisted and also babysat for someone who does like an online spelling bee show.
Oh,
yeah. It's really fun. Wow. It was like during the pandemic. So, you know, people really, we were all excited about doing stuff on FaceTime online. And it was like an online spelling bee contest you do with friends. And, that was super fun.
Yeah. And let's talk about the Greek Theater because is it true that you were a server at the Greek Theater in LA when the pandemic hit and they had to lay you guys off? Is that what happened?
Yeah. All concert venues were shut down very early on in the pandemic. The world was at a place where we were like taking our clothes off at our front door. We didn't know how people contracted things.
It was like season one of the pandemic.
Yes.
We were just kind of like pretending we knew what Andrew Cuomo was talking about, yes. But not really.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
100%. So yeah, they shut down all concert venues in LA, even the outdoor ones. So, you know, 5,000 employees just next day didn't have a job. And I was one of them.
Yeah. And once you find out that you don't have a job at the Greek Theater anymore, what is your next step in terms of like finding something to do?
I posted on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, I need a job. Greeks shut down. I'm down to do anything. These are my skills. I was like a personal organizer for a while. You know, I'm an assistant if there's anything out there. And then a mutual friend of Ariana and I, she was like, oh, my friend's boyfriend's looking for a personal assistant. And so I applied and one phone call later, I got the job.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where you go from Ann Maddox, personal assistant, to Ann Maddox, MVP of Vanderpump Rules. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about what it's like to see your name on Reddit and how Scandoval changed Ann's perspective on the internet. And we're back. So this is where I kind of want to bring in the internet of it all, because, you know, when Scandoval hit more than 1 year ago in March 2023, every episode, every Instagram post, every person was being reevaluated and like thrust into this online plus national spotlight. And it just like took over and exploded into this water cooler scandal. And so I wanted to first ask, where were you when the news broke on March 3rd that Sandoval and Ariana had broken up?
I was actually in Japan. My dear friend Oscar Montoya and I went to Japan. We were going to teach improv at my middle school. It was like 5 a.m. or I was just super early in the morning when my phone started just blowing up. It was just a bunch of people asking, like, are you okay? You know, like, tell me if you need anything. A friend sent me the article when I first saw it. I didn't believe it. Because, you know, there was talk right before the scandal dropped that Tom and Ariana had an open relationship. In my head, I was like, there's no way that's a possibility. They are committed. Mom and dad love each other.
Yeah. That's interesting that when you first get that like TMZ headline, your first reaction is kind of like disbelief, which actually makes complete sense because for the past 11 years, so many things have been written about the cast and a lot of it is true. A lot of it is not true. Yeah. Like, what has been your thinking whenever you see something online about these people, including the people you were working for? Like, were you always a little bit like, ah, like that's just tabloids? Or would you ever like ask them like, hey, is this true?
I feel like because I'm assistant, I, you know, wanted to respect their, unless they brought it up, I wouldn't ask. You know, if it's not true, it probably doesn't feel good. Everyone speculating about something where you're like, that's not true. And I just wanted to die. When there was that rumor that Schwartz and Rachel were kissing in Coachella, I knew that Schwartz was in LA, you know, in the valley because he was like working with my old boss at the time. Like, I always took everything with a grain of salt.
What made you realize this was real?
My dear friend, Molly. She sent me a link to an article that like confirmed it. Like, this is confirmed. Mm-hmm. This is a statement from Ariana's team. And that's like when everything came crumbling down, where it was like that sobering feeling where you're like, holy shit, this is real.
Not that you have to be like super close to the point where you see the stuff coming, but was it weird the fact that you were like Tom Sandoval's personal assistant, that you were so close with Ariana and that this happened and you just had like no idea that it was going to happen?
Yeah.
Did it feel like you were kind of left out of like a conversation or something?
It was like finding out that, I mean, this is kind of extreme. My dad passed away, so I definitely have daddy issues, but it was like finding out your dad had a secret life where it was a mix of emotions of like, how did I not know? Like, I'm so close to this person. Like, how did I miss all this? And just being shocked. When you care for a friend, like, you think the best of them. So when they mess up big time, you're just not expecting it. And I think the moment that it really settled in was seeing this paparazzi photo of Tom. I left my car at Tom and Ariana's because parking is, you know, there's street cleaning in LA.
Yeah.
You need a place where you can park your car when you leave. So he like let me park my car there because, you know, his car was in the shop. He needed a car. Mm-hmm. So it just made sense. And then seeing him like putting his suitcase like in my car in a paparazzi photo, I was like, this is real.
I want to talk a little more about how you kind of processed past this, because just the context is like, you're in Japan, you're in a different time zone, you're a little bit like physically disconnected from this world. But on top of that, you have to go back and continue being his personal assistant. So can I ask, who was like the first person you talked to once it kind of sunk in like, oh, this is real and I have to go back and like work?
I assumed that Ariana was being inundated with, you know, messages and just being bombarded. And I wanted to be empathetic to that. So I reached out to her very good friend, Brad, and was like, can you please tell her that, you know, like, I'm thinking of her. I love her so much. I had no idea, you know, is she okay? I did think about messaging Tom, but I think I was like, kind of processing my own feelings. And I had this like woven in excuse of being in a different country, a different time zone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely like was like, okay, this luxury is here for me. I'm going to accept it gracefully and graciously and enjoy mm-hmm. my time grieving my dad's death and enjoying my time with, you know, old friends and just like stay present, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because when you go on a trip like that, you can kind of not think about work because you're not physically there. You don't have to think about like your friends or whatever you're leaving behind in LA because once again, you're just not there. One thing that is in Japan is the internet. And so I kind of want to talk about the fact that you kind of became this like tertiary character, not only in like season 11 of Vanderpump Rules, but the fact that Reddit, for example, was every minute posting theories and timelines and screenshots and interrogating everything they've ever seen, knew, or heard about Vanderpump Rules. So I wanted to ask,
yeah,
what was it like to see your name be dragged into these conversations, like on Reddit, in articles, on TikTok, with people like investigating your comment section on Insta? Like, what was all of that like?
It was definitely fascinating. While I was in Japan, you know, we didn't have that much accessibility with the internet. I like rented a hotspot so that I could like use my Google Maps and things to get places. But we definitely were like enjoying our time there. Once I got home back to LA, I was like, all right, let's dig in. I think at the time, you know, nothing in season 11 has aired. So there wasn't much there. And it's just really fun to see people be like, I met his assistant once at a show. Like, she sold me a t-shirt. Like, that's kind of fun. Like, it was nothing too personal. So it was kind of exciting. People on Reddit are very funny. They're very smart and they're very funny.
Yeah. And did you have to change your boundaries or kind of like your social media curfew when Scandoval hit? Because at some point, they bring up your name and you just never expect it. Like, did you have to start being like, ah, I can't look at this, can't look at that, da 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 da?
That didn't start happening till recently. Like, everything through Scandoval, since the last couple episodes aired, that's when I started feeling like maybe this isn't healthy for me. Maybe I do need to put in this boundary to keep my sanity. And I'm like currently grieving for like, you know, the time that I would spend on Reddit. Like, I haven't logged on in a while.
Is it fair to say that you've kind of had to stop checking the Vanderpump Rules subreddit
yeah.
because you are appearing in season 11, which is currently going, and, you know, you have a pretty fair role, which is that you are the messenger between Tom and Ariana, who are still living together during the show, during the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you are watching the season, right? And mm-hmm. you're like recapping it a little bit on your podcast. What is the weirdest thing about watching yourself like literally be a character on TV?
It is. I mean, I feel like my brain's being split in half, like just spaghettified every time it happens. Yeah. But, you know, like, you think you know how you present yourself to the world, but then you see yourself and you're like, oh God, that's what I sound like. That's what I look like. That's, why is my hair like that? Like, why is there lipstick on my teeth? Why didn't anyone tell me? Like, those thoughts start running through your mind. And I don't know. I mean, maybe this is just like a me self-esteem issue, but I definitely had those moments. And then also it's interesting seeing what they cut out and what they didn't use, you know, because we shot a lot of more stuff than what you see. Seeing how they piece together stories, even though I worked in reality TV for a lot of years, I never really got that side of it. But when you're in front of the camera, you only know what you shoot. You don't know what everyone else is shooting. So you're like, oh, this makes sense to this specific storyline that I'm living. But yeah, in the grand scheme of things, who cares?
Yeah. Kind of thinking about that time and going all the way to now, what has been like the hardest part or the hardest period of that like Scandoval era for you? Is it the fact that people were talking about you and to you on social media? Is it kind of like just your own personal grieving process? Like, what do you kind of remember being the hardest?
Some scenes might be produced, but the consequences and the emotions and, you know, these relationships being destroyed are all very real. So if anything, mm-hmm. I was so focused on, you know, like, A, I had this job where I had to make sure that my, you know, my boss who's paying me is content and needs everything they need. And at the same time, like, my friend who I very much care for, who I see every single day for the last 3 years, Ariana, is devastated. And I would be devastated too. And you worry about how they are, how they're feeling. And my parents are divorced. So I definitely was like re-feeling feelings. I'm pretty open about the fact I was diagnosed with PTSD, CPTSD. So, mm-hmm. you know, a big concern of mine is making sure that I don't get triggered in a professional setting. You know, you're like spending 10 hours out, 8 to 10 hours at work and just being like, are they okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Am I okay? You know, and doing that for that long is tiring. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has Scandoval and working for someone whose like main job is to be in reality TV, has that changed the way you think about the internet? Has it changed the way you see the internet?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely has changed my views of the internet in good and negative ways, where there's like the good is people reaching out to me, especially doing the podcast. It would be like people who are like, oh, I also was diagnosed with CPTSD, PTSD, and I know exactly the thing that you're like describing or talking about. It's so inspiring, and people reaching out to me and that makes me like cry tears of joy, because it's like mm-hmm. having this disorder, you kind of can feel alone, and having people not feel so alone is really nice. But at the same time, the bad side is really bad, where it's just like trolls tearing you down, you know, and you think you wouldn't care. Like, I honestly thought like, oh, yeah, whatever. I wouldn't care. They're trolls. Like, trolls are trolls. But it's like one of those things where they're anonymous. They're saying these things and they will dig at you until they find something that resonates.
Yeah. And I think the toughest thing about that, too, is that like you worked with and for two people who, like, even before all this happened, were getting the best comments and the worst comments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Constantly. And yet seeing that and seeing the human side of it still never prepares you for when it's your turn.
Yes.
Because the internet doesn't tell you when it chooses you to be the target of the day. It just happens. And you're
yes.
like, so it's 9 a.m. and I have to go through life with my job and still think about this. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And like you'll see like the Jimmy Kimmel, like celebrities reading mean tweets, and you're like, yeah, it's funny. Who cares? Like, I could take it with a good attitude too. And then you actually read them and you're like, oh God.
Like, yeah.
That makes me so sad. Yeah. Yeah.
Something I kind of found in one of the Reddit like recaps of your podcast, someone on Reddit kind of pointed out that you might be one of the first Asian women featured on Vanderpump Rules, which Ooh. Is both not surprising because like that entire series regular cast is V white, yeah, not even half, yeah. just white.
Yeah.
But I did want to ask,
yeah.
you know, you do appear on season 11, and did it ever cross your mind that by signing up to do that, you would be one of the only Asian cast members on the show? Like, did that add a new layer of pressure? Did it cause second thoughts? Has that hit you at all?
It hits me in the way where Kyle Chan, who's on the show, featured a lot. He's also Asian American, and like definitely in the friend group, there's some, you know, splitting, and like there's so few of us, it's just important for all of us to take care of each other no matter what. There's so many things that we understand and really like get about each other that like there is like a bond that is like automatically yeah. there.
Maybe there's like a shared trauma of the fact
yes.
that like, not that you guys were directly involved with Scandoval,
yeah.
but there is something about witnessing something as a tertiary character.
Yeah.
And then just having random days where like online on Reddit, you become the main character of that day of that subreddit.
Yeah.
And like, unfortunately, there are so few people who understand that. There are so few people who were there March 2023 knowing exactly what it was like to get their phones just blown up the way yours were. Let's talk about now, which is the fact that, spoiler alert, you ended up leaving your job as Tom Sandoval's assistant before season 11 aired. Mm-hmm. Do you have a new job now?
Yeah.
What are you working on now?
I am working a temp job, a full-time temp job.
I don't want to speculate, so I'm going to go right to the source and just say there are some possible conversations happening online about you possibly working with another cast member on Vanderpump Rules. Can I ask, is there any thoughts about you maybe appearing in season 12 of Vanderpump Rules if that happens?
Yeah. I mean, no one has approached me yet, but I would love to. I think that would be really fun. I'm already in it. Let's see where this takes me.
Amazing. Okay. So my last question is, if you could go back to the Anne Maddox who was taking a phone interview for a personal assistant job working for a cast member of Vanderpump Rules, would you have told her to take it?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. This last few years, 3 or 4 years, have been so fascinating. And I feel like my brain is growing and learning more about things like I didn't know existed in life. I just want to live life to the fullest, sort of like I'm in that phase of grief, I think.
Yeah.
Seeing your dad pass away and knowing that he had still had many things that he wanted to do and experience and time ran out, I think really affected me in a way where I'm I just want to know everything about the world.
Okay, that's the show. I want to thank Anne Maddox for joining me on today's episode. You can find her podcast, We Signed an NDA, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so definitely subscribe. That way, you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review on Apple or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @icymi_pod, and you can always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com. ICYMI is produced by Sierra Spragley-Ricks, Rachel Hampton, and me, Candace Lim. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's vice president of audio. See you online or on the Vanderpumpaholics subreddit.